You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks. Welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time tonight, and I want to welcome you. I think it's a great thing to have people for the very, very first time with us, and I think you're going to be pleased as well. So if it is your first time, welcome aboard. Hope you make a habit out of it. It's a good habit to get into, a really, really good habit to get into. I guess you have probably been following the news from Mars about the Spirit rover having some problems, and they encountered a glitch. They weren't really sure what the deal was, and they've been working on it. Well, apparently they have gotten the glitch worked out, and that's a good thing. It is now back to the business of exploring and doing what it's supposed to do. So hopefully we will find more and more really cool stuff on Mars. Because that's what it has been doing, finding really cool stuff on Mars. Also, a little update, repairs to our system after recent attacks. I didn't say much about it. We had several different types of recent attacks. One of them was online and kind of messed up our system a little bit. Those repairs are just about complete. Everything is almost back to normal. We are having a little bit of a problem with our video feed tonight, but things are getting back to normal and should be completely back up to normal by tomorrow. So today what we did is we sent out our K-Files e-zine. Now, the K-Files e-zine goes out normally after the Friday night show. But today, we sent it out early because it's got a really, really special, very special offer for our subscribers in there. And we wanted you to be able to get it. We wanted you to have the opportunity to respond to it. And that can only happen, of course, if you get it in time. So we sent it out early. If you're not a subscriber to the K-Files e-zine, be sure you do that, all right? It's free. It's our free weekly newsletter. And you do that by going over to kevinsmithshow.com. When you get over to kevinsmithshow.com, you'll see K-Files e-zine in red letters. You'll also see it. You just click that. You will also see K-Files e-zine over on the menu. So just click that, either one, and subscribe, all right? All right, my guest this evening is Wilbur Allen. He's a professional photographer. He lives in the Washington, D.C. area. And he is formerly, he was contracted by ABC News to cover the White House and Air Force One. On December 27th, 2008, he observed and photographed something very strange, reported it to the police, and you won't believe what happened next. He'll join us right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I'm all confused here this evening, and the reason I'm all confused is I'm fighting technology here. But we're able to bypass some of the stuff that's happening, and we are broadcasting, and that's what matters. My guest, as I said, is Wilbur Allen. He is a professional photographer. He lives in the Washington, D.C. area, and as I said, formerly has been contracted, one of the things he's done, to ABC News to cover the White House and Air Force One. On December the 27th, 2008, he observed and photographed something strange submerged in the waters of the Potomac River. He then reported it to the police. You won't believe what has happened since then. Mr. Allen, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Kevin, thank you for having me.
You know, I just found out about this today. I got an email from Robert Stanley, and the email had your story in it about what had happened. And, of course, then I contacted you right away. And you agreed to be with us on the show tonight, and I want you to know that I appreciate it. It was a short notice, but I appreciate you for being here.
Not a problem.
Well, let's begin with your background just a little bit. Tell us a little bit about Wilbur Allen, and we know that you were contracted to ABC News to cover the White House and Air Force One. What else do we need to know about your professional background?
Well, I come from a U.S. Air Force family, and my father raised us on military bases around the world. And one of those bases, or a couple of bases, I might add, as a child, extraterrestrials made contact with me.
On a U.S. Military base?
It was a base in England called Sculthorpe. It was right outside of a base called Rendlesham. Except the night that I saw these aliens, apparently they had landed outside the base perimeter, and obviously we lived off base. And to my surprise as a child, there's nothing like waking up to see a group of extraterrestrials bust into your room and approach you.
How old were you?
Five.
5 years old. And these extraterrestrials, what did they look like?
They were what we classify as grays. The only exception was these grays were in silver spacesuits.
Okay, what kind of a one-piece jumpsuit type thing?
It was like a one-piece jumpsuit. They had no mouth that I could recall, and believe me, I have a very good memory. And that was one thing that I could never forget. It caused some problems, especially when I would see certain science fiction movies that would have these alien figures or characters in them. And that would set off fear that would cause me not wanting to go to bed at night. So there were elements I had to deal with as a child making contact with extraterrestrials. And in doing so, I would go back to school and tell my teachers what I saw, and in the process, they would do their evaluation, which was very similar to that of the mental health workers sent by the District of Columbia Police Department to assess my...
Yeah, we'll get into that in just a bit, because I want to really dig into that a bit. But, all right, let's talk about your professional career. You're a professional photographer.
I'm also a microwave broadcast engineer, and that was what my contract was for ABC News. I also served as director of photography, videography, and photographic samples for them. My background is photography and chemistry. I have a patent in chemistry for the development of film, which I created back in the early 90s, which utilized a form of low-voltage radiation in the processing of the film itself. And in doing so, I started noticing in some of the samples that I was taking with this technology visible airborne anomalies, UFOs, in high definition.
Okay. Now, we may come back to that, but let's jump forward now to December the 27th, 2008. Let's talk about that. Tell us where you were and what you were doing.
I was at a club called the Zanzibar Club in Southwest D.C., and was doing a photo session for a group that contracted me to take their photographs during this performance. Prior to them going on the stage, I decided to go outside the club, to the rear of the club, where there are boats which are docked to a pier. People live in these boats. These are not the standard boats that, you know, you just jump in on weekends and have fun on the weekend. People live in these boats. I set up my camera towards the set of very nice-looking yachts and noticed that in front of these yachts, about, I would say, 2 meters in front of the yachts, submerged in the Potomac River, I noticed two objects. One of them was modulating red, white, and blue. The other maintained a blue visual integrity. And they were stationary underwater. I noticed that as the waves of the river would pass over them, that these objects would diffuse. It was not forensically possible for what I photographed to have been a reflection on the surface. These lights that I photographed were clearly beneath the water. I took about 9 frames, and I didn't think anything of it at first. Went back into the club, looked at the samples I took on this camera, and I noticed that these lights were in water, so I went back out to the same location and shot another series of images which had no lights in them at all, from the same position I took the first set.
Okay, so you originally took a set of about 9 photographs.
I took 9 photographs in series. And essentially, those 9 frames, if you put them in a sequenced animation program, which I did and I provided you the sample, clearly showed that there were objects in the river. When I took the sample and loaded it into my computer and did a close analysis of these particular shots, I called the Southwest Washington D.C. Police Department.
Okay, now how long was it between the time you took the shots and the time you called the police? How long was it?
I would say it was about an hour and a half.
Okay.
Because I had to do the job that I was contracted for before I could go home and do a serious analysis of what I photographed in the water next to the living quarters of these boats.
So
when I called the Southwest Police Department, the Waterfront Division, an officer picked up the phone and indicated to me that first, after I explained to him that I took a picture of what I think to be a submarine in the water, he said that the water wasn't deep enough to support a submersible, first. Second, he said that the visual quality of the river was incapable, due to sediment and other impurities, to reflect or project lights that are beneath it. Impossible, he said. Then he says to me that there is a strong possibility that after telling me, of course, that the water couldn't reflect light, that what I photographed was a reflection of the Virginia side, which is approximately 1,500 meters from my location. So he added injury to insult.
Did you tell him that you were...
He never once looked at the pictures, never even asked to look at the pictures.
Okay, now you're talking with him on the telephone, right?
Yes.
And did he send an officer out to look at the pictures, to investigate, take a report?
Not at all. In fact, he dismissed it. And in dismissing it, I took it to his supervisor, which was the chief of police of the District of Columbia, Kathy Lanier, and sent the samples to the chief.
Okay, now, when you say you took it to her, did you have a meeting with her in person?
Not at all, not at all. I sent it to her, first of all, in the email, and explained to her, based on the samples that I sent her, and also based on the samples of the objects I photographed in the District of Columbia earlier, that there is a very strong possibility that these submerged objects were possibly of extraterrestrial origin. In that letter.
Okay, and what happened then?
She responded first by having a rather masculine-sounding feminine detective call me and ask me questions, and then she arranged for her and another partner of hers to meet me at my house. The people who came to my house weren't detectives. The people that came to my house were the mental health social workers that the police chief sent to my home to evaluate my psychological, intellectual, and professional association to these objects.
All right, so the mental health workers showed up instead of detectives, and you had an appointment, as far as you knew, to meet with detectives, right?
Absolutely. So I was under the assumption that these two individuals that came to my home were District of Columbia Police Department detectives, which they were not.
How did you find out they were not?
The next day, the individual, that young lady who was the main interviewer, and I have to say, it was kind of insulting and it really hurt me in a sense. This young lady was very attractive, very attractive. She would be the kind of girl I'd love to introduce to my mom, you know? But after this meeting, I would never meet that lady again because I felt she had the wrong impression of me in the first place, especially after making the presentation. And I noticed in making my presentation and showing the samples of the images I took at Southwest Waterfront that her focus wasn't necessarily on the images, but on my psychological disposition. It became more an analysis of my mental state versus the analysis and examination of a significant police report with forensic samples.
Okay, but how did you find out they were not police detectives? How did you find out they were mental health workers?
The young lady who did the interview called me, and I said to her, just in passing the conversation after the follow-up interview that night, asked her that, you know, I said, well, you know, as a detective, I said, wouldn't you find the technology that I was using helpful in doing your investigations? And then she said, oh, no, hold on, Mr. Allen. I'm not a detective. I'm with the District of Columbia Mental Health Department.
And did she give you her name?
Yes, she did. And the young lady's name was Miss Teresa Gibbs. And Miss Teresa Gibbs, like I said, is a very attractive young lady. She's very intelligent, very articulate, but she was not qualified to assess the visual data first, nor was she qualified to assess my mental or intellectual acuity.
Well, we took a look at a list of Department of Mental Health employees, and we were able to verify that there is a Teresa Gibbs, whose title is Mental Health Specialist, grade 11, and hired by Department of Mental Health on 5/22/2006. So they indeed do have a Teresa Gibbs working there.
Well, it was completely inappropriate to send two individuals to do a follow-up investigation and listen to the examples and presentation that I made and not necessarily say to me that they were doing a mental and psychological profile on me.
So you had no idea that that's what they were doing when they were doing it?
Not at all. Not at all. And I took that as an insult.
And so what happened, what has happened since then? What have you done since then?
Well, I had to make this whole thing known, because to me, I find it very odd that, first, even after submitting forensic samples, that they would take this approach. And the approach is not on the report, but on the reportee, the person making the report, and trying to assess to see if that person was of sound psychological state of mind. And I backed that up a little bit first by saying that I worked with Kathy in the past, and I had been doing some business with them in terms of trying to set up meetings for photo sessions, which I was turned down on a few of those things I tried to set up, and some other events that I would stay in contact with her with. And I was taken back by the fact that she felt it necessary to send mental health workers to do a police investigation.
All right, let me retrace this just a little bit. You filed a complaint over the telephone with the police department. That's what it's not. You're not complaining, but that's what it's called. It's, you're filing a complaint.
It's called a complaint. I filed a report.
And the person that you talked to at the police department was dismissive of it. Did not send anyone to investigate it.
Not at all.
Well, now, I don't want, in fairness, to second-guess a situation where I wasn't sitting there watching what the police were doing. On the other hand, I can say that in 50 states, it is customary, generally speaking, if you file a complaint, the police are coming out to investigate. Generally speaking.
Absolutely.
Now, this is even more interesting, though, Wilbur, because this is in the Washington, D.C. area.
Yes, it is.
And we are living in times where they have locked this country down virtually like the Fourth Reich, and with all types of national security. And I'm not saying it's unnecessary. I'm just saying it is a lockdown. When it comes to anything having to do with security,
I've got to say, yes, it is a lockdown, but it is not a complete lockdown because they do not have all the bases covered.
No, they don't. But the point is, they tell all of the school teachers, they tell all of the police, the post office workers, even Boy Scout leaders, they tell everybody, if you see or hear anything that's a little strange, be sure you report it. It could be a security issue. So here you're reporting something submerged in the Potomac freaking river, and they don't even send somebody to investigate. They're dismissive of it.
They sent someone to investigate, but not that event. They sent someone to investigate my psychological disposition.
Well, and that's what I find very interesting. Because if indeed there had been something submerged, I'm not saying there wasn't. I'm just doing a hypothetical here. If indeed there's something submerged there, and I'm a police dispatcher, and I don't send someone to check it out, and that turns out to be something that is a threat to national security, I'm in huge trouble.
That does seem to be a problem.
So you kind of wonder, in these times, in these circumstances, in the environment in which we now live, how a police, I suppose it was a dispatcher, on the phone with you, could just take it upon himself or herself. I don't know, was it a male or a female?
It was a male.
Just take it upon himself to just dismiss what may be something of major national security significance. We have to take a break, and when we come back from this break, we will continue. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Wilbur Allen, professional photographer. I'm not really sure if this is a correct title, microwave signal engineer, patent holder, and he photographed in high-definition photographs something submerged, lights submerged in the Potomac River in the Washington, D.C. area, notified the police, and the only people that came out to investigate his mental stability. Now you you told me about that you had elevated this to the office of the chief, Kathy Lanier, and then I believe you have filed a complaint now with the mayor's office, right?
I had to do that, and only because the procedure in which you deal with a police report was not implemented, and I had to make notice to that first, but also had to make notice to the fact that, without a doubt, that there were submerged anomalies in the Potomac near the living quarters of those boats that night in Washington, D.C.
All right.
Regardless of the fact that I may be psychologically unstable, according to the D.C. government.
Well, whether you're psychologically unstable or not psychologically unstable has nothing to do with what's in the photographs.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And that's where I took offense to this whole thing.
All right.
Let's, after Ms. Gibbs informed me that she was with the mental health department, I became ill. I don't know if I could explain it, Kevin. Have you ever had a headache from something that just knocked you down and kicked you in your ass there, and you just couldn't deal with it, and you just had to stop everything and take four or five aspirins and just go to sleep? That's how sick this made me.
Okay, now, after talking with you today, I called the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department to see if I could get a statement from them about this, and I want to play now the recording of the response that I got, and then I'll come back to you, and we'll talk about this. So let's go to the response that actually a number of responses that I got from the Metropolitan Police Department.
Thank you for calling 311. This is Jessica. How may I help you?
Jessica, my name is Kevin Smith. I am I'm a member of the media. I'm a talk show host. I'm tracking down a story involving the D.C. police, and I just wanted to know who would I contact to get a statement from the D.C. police on that.
One moment. Thanks for holding, sir. That will be the Metropolitan Police Department Communications Division. That number, before I transfer you, is 202.
Mm-hmm.
727-4383. Is there anything else I can assist you with before I transfer you over?
No, that's fine. Thank you much.
Thank you for calling. Hope for your connection.
Public information, Ms. Gooding.
Yes, my name is Kevin Smith. I am a talk show host, and I'm trying to track down some information about a report that was filed with D.C. police. It was a professional photographer who has been formerly assigned to White House Air Force One photography by
AD. Hold on just a moment, please.
Mm-hmm.
D.C. Public Information Office, Officer, yes, I'm
here. Yes, sir. My name is Kevin Smith. I am a talk show host, and I am trying to verify some information about a Wilbur Allen who filed a report with D.C. police on December 27th. He is a professional photographer, formerly ABC, assigned to White House Air Force One. And what he's telling us is that he was at the Zanzibar Club, and he photographed two unknown submerged light sources, and in the water, of course, and then reported it to the police. And he says that no police officer came out to take any information, to look at it or anything, but Kathy Lanier sent two mental health workers to assess his mental stability. He's now filed a complaint with the mayor's office, and I just wondered if we could get a statement from the D.C. police about this.
Hold on 1 second, sir.
Mm-hmm.
You have reached voicemail for Tracy Hughes, Executive Director of the Office of Communications for the Metropolitan Police Department. I am unable to take your call at this time, but if you would please leave your name and your number and the date and time of your call, and I will return your call within 24 hours or the next business day. If you require immediate assistance and this is a media inquiry, you may contact the Public Information Office at 202-727-4383. Thank you for your call. In the future, if you wish to bypass this message, you may do so by pressing the pound symbol.
At the tone, please record your message. When you are finished recording, hang up or press pound for more options.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Kevin Smith. I'm a talk show host. I'm trying to get a statement from D.C. police regarding a complaint filed by Wilbur Allen, a professional photographer who filed a report December 27th, 2008, filed a complaint with the police regarding submerged lights outside the Zanzibar Club, southwest waterfront, or south waterfront. And anyway, instead of a police officer taking the report and investigating, two mental health workers were sent to investigate his mental health. He's now filed a complaint with the mayor's office about that. I'm doing a show on that tonight. He will be live with me on the air. We would like to get a statement from the D.C. police. He says Kathy Lanier is the one that sent the mental health workers. So my telephone number is, and the communications division is, that number is where I started. They forwarded me to you. So if you could give me a call, please. Thank you. All right. That is the conversation, such as it is. Yeah, that's the conversation, such as it is, that I had with D.C. police, or tried to have.
Hold on 1 second, Kevin. Now, you played something there with an exact representation of what I went through trying to report this event in the water. I was passed from one person to another person to another person.
Well, what everyone has just heard took place this morning. I'm talking about this morning West Coast time. It was probably afternoon on the East Coast. But that happened this morning, my time. I have waited by the telephone all day and quite literally stayed right here by the phone. It didn't ring from D.C. It did ring, but not from D.C. My call ID device does not show that I have missed any calls today. So they didn't call me back. I don't know if they will. Now, let me say, in fairness to Kathy Lanier and in fairness to the D.C. Metropolitan Police, if they wish to come on this show and talk about this and explain their side of this, the door is open. We'd love to have them. But in the presence of silence from them, obviously only one side of the story gets told. And that silence from them indicates they agree that what we're hearing tonight from you, Wilbur, is accurate. So, the door's open. If they want to come and talk with us about this, I'll be happy to put Kathy Lanier on the air to tell us what's the deal from their point of view. Now, from my point of view,
Kathy Lanier is a great police chief and a great person. And I believe that possibly that this might have been a judgment call error on her behalf. And I'm playing the devil's advocate, as Ms. Gibbs said to me when she was doing her interview of my psychological assessment. And she's a great person. She's a great chief. She's handled crime in the district professionally and has it under control. But there's some elements I do believe that she does not want to be open-minded to, and those elements are the possibility that the airwaves, the airspace of Washington, D.C., is frequently inhabited by unidentified flying objects. She doesn't
want
to hear that.
That may be the case. But now,
about UFOs.
There may be another reason, too, and I just want to say, before I give this reason, I am not saying this is the case, and I'm not saying that Kathy Lanier, Chief Lanier, would be involved in this, not at all. But someone may be, and that is, you have a dispatcher who completely dismissed a report of something that could have been and may actually be a threat to national security. Completely
actually,
dismissed it.
Actually, Kevin,
and then this is a this doing things the way they've done them, doing things the way they've done them. You know, either you admit this dispatcher blew it and maybe he loses his job, or you discredit the witness to cover the dispatcher. That may be in play.
Kevin, I was sent to the Southwest Waterfront through the dispatcher. The dispatcher connected me to the officer at the River Division. That's where everything went south. So it was not the dispatcher in this case.
Whoever it was, he blew it. And absolutely. Either he has to be covered, and the way to do that is to discredit you with this mental health thing, or the truth comes out, and this guy's in trouble. That's where it lays as far as the police go. And now, I'm not saying that's what happened, but I'm saying those are the facts. If this comes out, and by the way, it's out, 95 countries just heard it, this is out. Okay, now there's someone in a police uniform or carrying a police badge who dismissed this. There was no investigation. You have photographic evidence that the world has just seen. I put it on the screen while you and I were talking. I put it up on the video. We watched your video where it's the pictures in sequence turned into a video. We watched that while you and I were talking. The whole world has seen it. There were lights there. Don't know what it was, but someone carrying a police badge in the climate and environment that we now live in dismissed this, didn't investigate it. Somebody's in trouble.
That might be the case here. And there is significant consequences, especially with national security. When you see in the water anomalous objects that have no purpose at all being there, and document them,
mm-hmm.
and have that dismissed is the insult to the injury.
Yeah, you would think at least an officer would be sent to take a look and at least be able to say, okay, it's called CYA. At least be able to say, well, you know, we went, we looked, we didn't see anything. That's not to say that there hadn't been something there, but we didn't see anything. We did what we could do. And then if something happens that is a national security issue, the police have covered themselves. In this case, they didn't cover themselves. In this case...
Not at all.
Yeah, in this case, I think they blew it. All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this break. More with Wilbur Allen. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Wilbur Allen, professional photographer and professional a number of other things. Patent holder on a very interesting and unique process for developing film. And he photographed something really strange in the Potomac River in the Washington, D.C. area. And the police did not investigate it, although he reported it. But they did investigate him. They sent someone out to check on his mental health. Now, Wilbur, one of the things that I say, and by the way, what I'm going to do now, just so you will know, is I'm going to put that series of pictures back on the screen so people can see them, and they can watch this while I talk. One of the things that I've said many times is, you know, when it comes to UFOs, one of the tactics that's been used in discrediting witnesses is to suggest that it was mass hallucination.
Exactly.
Well, one of the problems with that is that video cameras and still cameras do not photograph hallucinations. So if it's in the photograph, it's there. It happened. And so... not even taking a look at these photographs and sending mental health workers to check on your mental stability says a couple of things to me. First of all, I don't know who made that decision, but now let me confirm something before I say this. You said that you sent these, you emailed these photographs to the police, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So you emailed these photographs. We know then they either saw them or had the opportunity to see them because you sent them the photographs. Now, we're watching the photographs, and we can see that there's something in the water. We can see that there are two light sources there. And certainly the police who work the waterfront know whether or not those light sources are supposed to be there. You said you went back just a short time after you took these pictures, and those lights were gone.
Is completely.
Completely gone. Okay.
Completely. And I have to say, I went back there within 2.5 minutes after making that observation, going back into the Zanzibar and looking at my samples through the viewfinder of the camera that I'm using. And I've got to say, the D700 Nikon is state-of-the-art. It is not a flaw, a byproduct of that camera technology. What I photographed was there.
Okay, now, this whole chain of events suggests two possibilities. I can think of only two. One, the police knew what was there. Maybe it's some secret something that patrols the waters around D.C., and they knew it was there. And so they're just going to discount this. They're not going to investigate it. They already know what it is. They just can't talk about it. Now, that's a possibility. However, handling things the way they handled them draws attention, and I have to tell them, in the case of this show, international attention to the event. If it's a secret and you want to keep it secret, then you treat it normal and you investigate it. You write it up, and then do nothing with it. That's the way you keep it a secret, by keeping it right out in the open. All right? This chain of events suggests something else. They don't know what it is. They have had reports of something like this before. They don't want to cause a panic, and they've decided that since, when I say they know what it is, they know that it is. They don't know what it is. They've had reports of it. They don't want to cause a panic. And so they want to keep these, they want to discourage people from reporting these kinds of things, which is exactly the wrong thing to do in the security climate in which we live. So either way you slice this, this was not handled in a smart way, in my opinion. The way to handle it is to send a cop to investigate, write a report, just put down whatever he sees, take the pictures for evidence, submit it with a report, and then if it is something that's secret and has to remain secret, the report just dies in its tracks, but at least it's there. And so you just really have to wonder why they took the approach they did, because by taking the approach they did, they called international attention to the event. All right, now let me ask your opinion. What do you think it was?
Well, I don't know if you're totally familiar with my background as a photographer here in D.C., but I have taken several images in the past of airborne devices that clearly do not demonstrate capabilities that we as humans would have at this current level of technology. Clearly, they did not have those types of technology anywhere on Earth that would demonstrate the ability to warp out, that would demonstrate the ability to open up a wormhole in the sky and fly into it. And I photographed some rather abstract stuff here in D.C. Most of those things were unknown, anomalous light sources that were impervious to analysis, that were authenticated through analysis through the film lab by the Justice Department. And Mark Rosoff, who is a film lab technician, did the analysis of the film and authenticated the fact that what was imaged at the times I've been taking these unusual objects, what was imaged at that time was imaged on film and not doctored. So we established that, first, in the air of Washington, there are unknown anomalies. And my associate, Robert Stanley, has sent you some emails and some other links that clearly show that from the time that I took those photographs to this day, that USOs and UFOs have been imaged in the air and in the water of Washington, D.C., from that time till now. Clearly shows that. Even during the time of the inauguration of President Obama, there are samples which clearly showed unknown objects in the air. But yet, my samples of these objects in the water was dismissed, as were my objects in the air in the past, except for some of the people in some law enforcement agencies which took this material seriously. And there are some people who do take it seriously, but not DCPD.
All right. Now, you said that you have had some previous dealings with the Metropolitan Police in D.C., business dealings and so forth.
I was Marion Barry's photographer.
Okay.
And so when he was mayor of D.C., and that entailed a lot of photographs and things that I would have to do with the mayor while he was in the presence of D.C. Police's police chief at that time, which was Isaac Fullwood. And so my business dealings with the D.C. Police Department go back based on my district government employment, which I worked with the D.C. government at the time. But I'm not with them now.
Okay. Now, is there anything at all that you can think of in your past dealings with the D.C. Police, anything at all that could possibly be the basis for why they decided they would not investigate this complaint you filed?
Not at all. Not at all. The only thing that I could think is that some of the material that I sent to Kathy, and I sent Kathy the same samples I sent you, and you're open-minded, and you looked at those samples, and you concluded from looking at those samples that obviously that there was something in the air or in the water. Mm-hmm. Now, send the samples to someone else that doesn't have the same ability to reason unknown events and anomalous objects as UFOs, they're not going to register that. So I'm quite sure she probably thought that I was a nutcase.
Well, look, let me not be kind now about that. You can see that there's something in the water. You look at the photographs.
Absolutely.
Whether you know what that is or you don't know what that is, that's beside the point. There it is. It's there. Now, there's no way to know what it is unless you send someone out to investigate. Maybe you will not find out what it is, but you for sure will not find out if you don't send someone to investigate. And so it's not a matter of See, police, here's what I'm trying to get at. Police are not trained to believe, nor are they trained to disbelieve. Those are emotional decisions. Believing and disbelieving are emotional decisions. And belief is another word for faith. They're trained to take a report. This is what the guy said he saw. Let's go see if we see it. That's the way it works. All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Wilbur Allen. And we're going to open the phone line here in just a moment so that folks can call in and ask their questions, make their comments, and we'll do that momentarily. First, I have one more question. I had asked you, Wilbur, if there was anything in your past dealings with D.C. police that would have been possibly the basis for them refusing to investigate your complaint. You said absolutely nothing. All right, now here's a follow-up. Is there anything at all in your dealings with D.C. police at any time that would have possibly been the basis for them deciding to send mental health workers to check on your mental stability?
Not at all.
Okay, fair enough. So then the question is, how come the police response from the Metropolitan Police in Washington, D.C. was out of step with standard police procedure in 50 states in terms of whether to investigate or not? Why was it out of step with the facts presented whenever they sent mental health workers to check on these photographs that had been sent to them? They didn't check on that. They checked on the mental health of the person. Look, photographs are photographs. Now, let me explain this, and then we'll open the phone lines. Let's say that you had called in that night. Let's say you didn't see light submerged in the river. You saw a body floating in the river. And you took photographs of it, and you called that in. Do you think the police would have come out to investigate? I submit they
would. Absolutely.
Absolutely. But if they didn't.
Within seconds.
Yeah, but if they didn't, for whatever reason, and then you took that next step, and you emailed the photographs of the body floating in the river to the police chief, would they have come out to investigate then, or would they have sent mental health workers? Well, photographs are photographs. They show what they show. And, you know, if it shows a body floating in the river, it shows a body floating in the river, and that has nothing to do with whether the guy that took the pictures is mentally sound or not. There's a body in the river, and it needs to be investigated. Same thing when you send photographs of submerged lights where they're not supposed to be and where they were not a couple of minutes later. The photographs show what the photographs show. Why would you send mental health workers? I mean, maybe you might send a camera technician to check the camera, but that would be bizarre as well. But that it certainly would be.
They probably wouldn't be qualified to do so.
Yeah, but it would at least be more in line with sort of an investigation. I don't know. The whole thing is just bizarre to me. I have to tell you, I cannot figure out why the police would have taken the tack that they did. Nothing suggests an answer to me. All right, folks.
Kevin, I can't even answer that. That was absolutely a bizarre act. And obviously, through the way you're reacting to it, you have the same opinion as I. There was something in the water there. Why didn't they take this seriously?
Well, and especially since it's the Washington, D.C. area, and especially since we have such heightened security measures in place all over the country, but it really heightened in Washington. I mean, there's restricted airspace all over the Washington area where things cannot fly. And I would bet you there are restrictions about the waterways as well for certain types of vehicles. Don't know that to be a fact, I'm guessing. All right, the telephone
I've never seen a submersible in the Potomac. Never.
Never, huh?
Never. First of all, there are rocks in the bottom of that river. It would completely crash a submersible.
All right, let's go to the telephone line. The telephone is open, folks, and the telephone number is 1-623-237-3814. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Okay, the caller is not with us. Let's try this call. Nope, that one is gone as well. All right. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Don.
Hi, Don.
Call for Phoenix. That was me calling.
Okay.
Hello?
Don, we're waiting.
Okay, yeah. I had a comment and a question for Wilbur. I'm assuming those boats there, some of those yachts, probably belong to some pretty high-profile people since this D.C. area, correct?
Absolutely, and those are yachts.
So is there any chance that those lights could have been divers? Is somebody possibly tagging one of those yachts?
I would have to say no, because that night it was about 27 degrees out there. It was extremely cold. It's not the kind of water that's hospitable for diving late at night. It's extremely frigid. It was impossible for that to have been any kind of submersible that I would think of, especially when it was modulating light.
Well, plus, there are no oxygen bubbles surfacing.
At all.
Yeah, and I would say the mental health officials that came out, it sounds more like a discrediting campaign than anything else to discredit you.
Well, they attempted to do that, but, you know, fortunately, if you stand your ground and you've got facts and data behind you to support your statements, then there's very little a person can do to knock you down. And there was nothing they could do. In fact, after showing them the data, they were overwhelmed. But that didn't answer the fact as to why mental health officials would be at my house doing a police investigation. So I have issues there.
Yeah. Okay, Don, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Kevin.
You bet. Yeah. It is very bizarre. That's the best way I can describe it. Very bizarre. The telephone number is 623-237-3814. And we will take your calls at that number. All right, let's go to the telephone if I can get it to answer. It's working very slowly. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Okay. That caller is not there, so let's end that call and take the next one, if we can get the software to work right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Kevin from Northern Alberta calling.
Yes, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, Don stole my thunder. I was going to suggest the same thing that possibly the police knew what was going on in the water that night, and for some reason they didn't want to advertise the facts, so that they sent these two folks down to discredit your guest.
Well, it could be, but I'll tell you something. You see, and look, I don't know why they did it, and I'm not being overly critical here. I'm saying it's bizarre. But I'm not being overly critical. I will say this. All you government folks, listen to me. Out here in the real world, where we don't breathe the rarefied air of government, These kind of tactics point to the event and scream that you know something. That's what happens here. This is the stupidest tactic you could possibly use if you're trying to keep something quiet. Now, I'm not saying that you are trying to keep something quiet. Maybe you're not. Maybe this is just a big royal screw-up. It can happen. But these kind of tactics of trying to ridicule the witness and trying to discredit the witness and that sort of thing, if that's what's going on, believe me, out here, the public doesn't buy that anymore. It doesn't work. Hey, Kevin, thanks for the call, man.
I agree.
Yeah, you agree with that, huh?
I do. I just wondered if when Wilbert called him, did he mention that they were UFOs or is it just strange lights?
I call them USOs.
Okay.
Okay.
That's a description for anything that's unidentified and submerged, a USO.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It might have been better just to say that there were some strange lights in the water and not call them UFOs or USOs, but that's just my guess. Thanks, Kevin.
All right. Thanks for the call.
I got to mention this, Kevin, that I did an analysis of those lights in the water and that this particular software that I use is specifically designed for all known light sources, and these lights did not respond to analysis. So what does that say? If it's not a known light source, then it can't be of human origin.
I'm trying to take that in. Your software can recognize all known light sources on this planet?
Known light sources. That's the key right there. I'm using Photoshop CS4. It's very advanced. I'm also using Combustion 4.5 and Avid HD.
Uh-huh.
They're extremely sensitive to light sources, and they're specifically designed for all known light sources to be rendered. Now, introduce the light source that is not familiar with that software, it can't parse it. And obviously, these lights in the water did not respond to the filters of CS4 Photoshop like conventional lights.
All right, let's go back to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
My name's Richard, calling from Salt Lake City, Utah.
All right, Richard.
Well, I'm curious if there's been any other media attention, or is this the first media attention that there's been in this story?
I don't know. Has there been other media attention, Wilbur?
It is first. It is an exclusive.
Okay. This is the first.
And it just seems to me, this is less than 30 days away from the inauguration, the fact that there could have been some secret stuff from the, you know, Secret Service or anything under there, it seems obvious to me that the police would put that on a low priority as far as checking, but still the mental health officials don't make sense to me.
Well, let's
none
say
of it made any sense.
Yeah, none of it makes sense. Let's say that they know what it is. Let's say they were given advanced warning, as you say, from Secret Service, if that's what it is. And I mean, we're just speculating, right? So let's say that's what it is. All right. If that's the case, you want to keep it a secret, right? So what you do is you act normal. You send a policeman to take the report, to look at the pictures, to investigate. You act normal. When you act out of your normal routine, you act outside of that, you draw attention to the thing you're trying to cover. So, I mean, if that's what they were doing, boy, I'll tell you, whoever planned that strategy needs to go back to school.
Yeah, but I also wonder if the police had other things that if they would take priority on that or not.
Well, whenever the pictures were sent to the police, along with an emailed report, look at their response. What was their response? They did respond by sending mental health workers. They responded by sending mental health workers. A bad strategy. Bad strategy.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that.
Hey, thanks for the call. Are you a first-time caller?
I am.
Oh, well, listen, first-time callers get some applause here.
Thank you.
All right.
I've been listening to your show for about 2 months. I've enjoyed
the
show very much. Thank you very much, Kevin.
All right, thank you. All right, from Salt Lake City, Utah. Yeah, I mean, see, nothing fits with the possibilities is the problem. Let's say that they know what's going on, and what's going on is some sort of secret security measure or whatever. Completely understandable. It's Washington, D.C., and as the caller said, we were less than 30 days from inauguration. So if that's what's going on and you want to keep it a secret, don't do something stupid that calls attention to it. You just follow your normal routine. I don't know. All right, the telephone lines are open. The telephone number is 623-237-3814. 1-623-237-3814. And we will be glad to take your calls. Wilbur, you have also photographed, and I showed some of these photographs that you sent me. You've photographed anomalous objects in the skies above Washington, D.C. One of those photographs, at least one of them, shows something, a very anomalous light, kind of a light blue color, that appears to have landed on top of the Capitol building. What is that?
That it did. I could not answer that question at all, other than whatever that anomalous object was, it couldn't be analyzed. I did do some analysis on those anomalies, and there was a possibility, and I was speaking to that with Richard Hoagland and Ken Johnston, of the possibility that those may have been non-corporeal entities.
All right, now we're showing on screen now this blue light on top of the building. Now, what, it doesn't look like the Capitol building. What is that?
That is the Capitol building. That's the house side of the Capitol, and you're looking at the observation tower that's house side, and it's on the roof of the Capitol building.
All right, and you're not able to determine what that was.
We could not determine what that was at all.
Okay.
And it was in several shots.
All right. We'll get back to that photo in just a moment. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Jerry. I'm calling from Phoenix.
Hi, Jerry from Phoenix.
How are you tonight?
Outstanding, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to call in. I've spoken to Will in the past. Folks may not realize what an extraordinary photographer he is, but I've known Will from my friend Robert Stanley, and I know the association, Eric, goes back a ways. This is a really A-plus person, and if he were to tell me that he saw something, there would be no doubt in my mind that he was telling the truth. This is not the type of person that would make something up or try to gain notoriety because of it. I've seen these photos. They were sent to me by Robert. He was asking me to take a look, see what I thought. I haven't got a clue, but it's absolutely fascinating, and I really applaud Will for stepping out and bringing this public. It's unfortunate that they sent some mental health caseworkers to visit him. They don't have any idea what kind of a brilliant person this guy is. It really sounds to me like an X-Files kind of thing, and my question for Will is what you plan to do beyond this show with this information?
Well, I've taken it to another level, and hopefully I'll be dealing with some of my associates that are in office right now. One of my friends from the past is John Podesta, and I shared this information with John. And hopefully we're going to try to see if we can get Congress and the rest of this government to disclose information about UFO activity and UFO crashes and UFO sightings throughout the United States and the world.
You know, they see several similar items offshore in the South Pacific off the coast of Peru. And if we can get a picture of that, I'll get it sent to you. But thank you for taking the call, Kevin.
I would love some
fabulous Bruce guest. I'm really enjoying it.
Okay, Jerry, thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.
Right,
You mentioned that one of your friends is John Podesta, and of course we know that he is in the current administration, and we also know that he has spoken out previously in favor of UFO disclosure.
Absolutely.
Is it possible that you got the treatment you got sort of to head off that move, maybe to discredit you enough, try to discredit you enough to sort of head off this move to do UFO disclosure?
You see, there I have a problem with their attempt to, well, at some point, one of the interviewer, Ms. Gibbs, had mentioned to me that if I should photograph or see any of an anomalous object, to call her. And when you think about that, now, I'm going to send a picture of a UFO to the Mental Health Department of the District of Columbia. What logic and what purpose does that serve?
Well, it serves to build a case against you on the mental health front.
Well, you see, then there's an issue when the forensic data substantiates the claim. And if the forensic data substantiates the claim, how do you discredit the person that provides the forensic claim?
Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. I mean, let's say that I'll use the case of a murder again. Let's say a murder takes place, and the perpetrator of this murder leaves DNA of some kind at the scene, and the forensics technicians, the forensics crime scene technicians find it, they pick it up, they have it analyzed, and now they've identified or they have a DNA profile. Later, the perpetrator is focused on as a suspect. They take his DNA, take a blood sample or a swab from him inside his mouth, and they do the DNA profile, right? Now, they do that, and it's a match. Okay, so now we have the perpetrator matched up with the crime scene, right? But what if this guy has done time in prison for perjury? He's a known liar. Does that make any difference? Well, his DNA was there, but he provided DNA, but he's a known liar, so we can't trust that DNA. No, that doesn't make any sense at all. That's the same thing as saying, as the case you're making. If you've got the photographs, the forensic evidence that backs up the claim, it doesn't matter who took the photographs. If the photographs are genuine and they back up the claim, they back up the claim, period, end of discussion.
That should be the case.
So, you know, you wouldn't discount, in the case of that murder that I was using for an example, you wouldn't discount the DNA because the guy is a known liar. His DNA is his DNA. Photographs are photographs. They show what they show. So, I don't know. It's to me, is a very weird situation. And it either smacks of excessively bad police work, or it smacks of a high-level attempt to discredit and ridicule you, one or the other. That I don't see any other possibilities here.
They can try, but they will not succeed, because in any case, the truth and the facts will set it free, and the truth and the facts substantiate everything that I said here. Why they responded by sending mental health workers, my question is, maybe they needed to send the mental health workers to the person who sent that request.
It very well could be. It very well could be. All right, now, these objects that you photographed, we were talking about this a moment ago, the objects that you have photographed in the skies over D.C., what's the most recent one that you've taken?
In D.C. would be... let me see. I don't know if I had any in this year. I know 2008 was an abundant year for me. If it was the lottery, I won it multiple times.
Okay.
2008 was a hot spot for me for UFOs.
I asked that question and wasn't watching the clock. A break is taking over, so we'll have to get into that when we come back. All right, folks, right after this break, we'll be back. More with Wilbur Allen, and you can call with your comments or questions. All right, we're back. My guest this evening is Wilbur Allen. And, Wilbur, we've got some flash messages that have come in from around the world. So let me get to those. One of them that came in very early actually was from the United States. It says, no video. Yeah, we know. We were being attacked. But we got it. All right, this one from Canada, from Stefan. And it says, great show. Just wanted to comment on Mr. Allen's equipment and its capabilities. The Nikon 700 is indeed state-of-the-art and highly valued and expensive DSLR. That's a digital single-lens reflex, DSLR. Unless he's
extremely
got...
Extremely expensive.
I'm sorry?
It's extremely expensive.
Yeah. Unless he's got well over 400,000 actuations of the shutter, I can't see a company such as Nikon making such an error in its flagship unit's construction. In a simple point-and-shoot camera, perhaps, but the 700 is a camera any amateur photographer would salivate at getting their hands on, and it just isn't prone to capture something that isn't there. Very interesting case. Keep up the great work, sir. So that's from Canada.
That is a truthful statement.
Okay. Let's see. I got that one twice, apparently. Okay, here's one from the United Kingdom. It says, would you please ask your guest if he is the same gentleman who was mentioned by Robert Stanley when he was a guest on your show previously? Mr.
Yes.
Stanley told us of a professional photographer who photographed a UFO in Washington, went on assignment to photograph an album cover. And the answer is yes, and that's the photograph we took a look at, the blue light on the Capitol building, right?
That is part of it. That was part of it. But that whole sequence of images was extraordinary.
You were actually out there to photograph an album cover, and you weren't looking for things in the sky, right?
I wasn't. I didn't set out to take pictures of UFOs. I never set out to take pictures of UFOs. It just happened.
It just happened. Okay. The telephone is open, and the telephone line is 623-237-3814. If you're outside of the United States, the number will work. You simply dial 1-623-237-3814. If you don't want to pay that international long distance, if you're outside the United States and you're outside of Canada, you can use our flash message feature. All you have to do is go to my website. It is kevinsmithshow.com. Go to my website. Scroll down the page till you see flash message. It's in green letters. And it's a link that will enable you to send me a quick flash message, all right? 623-237-3814. All right, let's see if we can bring this call online. And, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hi. I just had a quick question and then I'll hang up.
All right.
What do you think those lights underneath the water was? Thanks.
Okay, thanks for the call. I think you addressed that earlier, but what about that? What do you think those lights in the water are?
Well, I know what they aren't. I know they aren't humanly generated light sources. They were virtually exact in terms of spectroluminosity to some of the other objects I've been imaging in the sky.
Explain that to us. What do you mean by that?
Well, for example, the U.S. Capitol samples, the green spheres I photographed at the U.S. Capitol, when I would take those green spheres in high definition and apply, for example, image algorithms such as solarization to the image itself. A standard color with solarization applied, the color turns black because solarization essentially it blackens all the color spectrum that's possibly visible to give you this solarized effect. Now, if standard colors mute and non-standard colors just change color, then the non-standard colors must not be colors that are within the program's capabilities. So I assumed, based on that analysis, that those objects in the water were of extraterrestrial origin.
So you, as a matter of fact, in that sequence that you sent me in the video, you did that. I mean, we see that happen in that sequence.
Exactly do that. And normal light went black, but these objects just changed colors. And if that was the standard color, a standard light source, solarization would have muted it. But it was not a standard light source. Therefore, what would you assume from that? You can only conclude that that particular series of lights underwater, which were not able to be analyzed, were of an unknown light source, and unknown light sources could possibly be extraterrestrial.
Have you ever seen a USO before this one?
Yes.
Where?
At the U.S. Capitol.
In the Potomac?
No, at the U.S. Capitol reflection pool.
How deep is that reflection pool?
About a foot and a half.
And so we're not talking about a big craft. We're just talking about a light of some kind that's in the water, right?
We're talking about UFOs that were the size of garden peas.
Wow.
And I've got samples of airborne anomalies the size of garden peas and marbles, stationary in the air and in high definition.
And then you've got this big blue light that looks like it's parked on top of the Capitol house wing. How big was that?
We estimated, based on the size of the observation dome there, that that object was about the size of a medium personal balloon.
What do you mean, personal balloon?
Like a balloon a person would get into to fly. A personal, a small, the olden days, balloons.
Yeah, a small hot air balloon capable of carrying one person.
Exactly.
Okay. And when was that picture taken?
July 16, 2002.
Have you seen any other unidentified lights like that on or near the Capitol since that time?
I took samples on November the 17th and 18th, the night Stanton Friedman and Richard Dolan came to town to do an investigation on that particular close encounter I mentioned at the U.S. Capitol. And that night, I took four pictures, actually six pictures, in front of the camera position of the Sci-Fi Channel crew. And in my photographs was the same object that you're looking at from 2002 in motion. The same objects.
What do you make of that?
Do
you think these are extraterrestrial vehicles, or do you think they are some type of entities?
I think there is the possibility that there is a dimensional portal in the vicinity of the U.S. Capitol building. Because my samples clearly showed, and I've got to say this, and I'm not a person that just goes around making up things to try to prove a point, but I've got a sample at the U.S. Capitol which clearly shows a stargate in the sky, a stargate.
What does it look like?
Like the stargate, an arc. And they flew into it and vanished.
And you got that on film?
What film? I had a single anomaly I stood beneath for 3.5 minutes. What it did in 3.5 minutes essentially negated the laws of light and motion. So I've got a sample here which puts Isaac Newton's laws of light and motion, negates it completely.
So when you say it negates the Isaac Newton's laws of light and motion, describe for us what you saw happen.
I photographed a formation of green spheres. The two lead spheres were green, and the rear spheres were modulating amber, red, green, and blue. They were modulating, and they were dripping into the air smaller anomalies of what I gauged from the visual sample that I was able to capture. But the sample shows in 3.5 minutes an object which was stationary in one position, dematerialized, rematerialized in another position in space. As it rematerialized in the second position in space it was captured, it was moving lateral and upwards. And mind you, I'm taking a picture of four luminous green objects moving in two different directions. According to the laws of light and motion, I should have gotten a picture of a green streak going horizontally and a green streak going vertically. Instead, I got a green streak going horizontally and a blue streak going vertically. Well, I'm sorry, I reversed that. It's a green streak vertical and a blue streak horizontally. So it, within itself, defied the laws of light and motion, because green objects moving should have left green streaks going in the direction they were moving, either way, and it didn't do that in this case. Also, it showed that as this object started to, fold space and go into the wormhole it generated, it started to oscillate in three dimensions. And I have this pattern which clearly shows equal patterns, not random patterns, but equal patterns in multiple directions, which is a physical impossibility. And we have no technology that does that. This thing vanished and rematerialized. I've never seen anything do that before, and it was silent.
How far away the picture that you took, where there's that big blue light on the Capitol? How far away from that were you? Well, let me rephrase it. Were you close enough that if there had been engine noise, you would have heard it?
Let's just say you could have heard a pin drop that night, because even while we were taking the pictures at the reflection pool, I don't recall ever even hearing the water. It was absolutely mute.
Is that normal?
I don't believe that is.
So do you think that the sort of noticeable silence was something imposed or produced by this Stargate thing?
Not Stargate, but the stationary formation of luminous green spheres. And mind you, there was large spheres, and then there were thousands of smaller ones surrounding it.
The larger ones, how large were they?
I guesstimate that they were the size of VW Beetles.
Okay, and then you say there were thousands of smaller ones. About what size would the small ones be?
From an egg to the size of a garden pea.
Did you get the impression that these were some type of technology, some type of machinery? Or did you get the impression that these are some type of living entities?
Life forms.
Life forms. Now, one of the things, Wilbur, that we have heard here on this show, we've had people talk about seeing things similar to this, and they say that some of them you could see through them. You could see them, but you could see through them as well. Did you see any like that?
I have a sample. The luminous object that landed on a roof, and the reason why I said I believe that was a non-corporeal life form, is that in that same shot, in that first frame, and that's frame number one of two of seven frames taken in front of the reflection pool, in that first frame, there was an object in the rear of the reflection pool.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Let me remind you that the music you hear on the show comes from independent artists, many of them at garageband.com, many of them at music.podshow.com. Go to those websites and enjoy. There are thousands upon thousands of great songs there by independent artists. You can also get their CDs at those sites as well. Also, some of the music you hear is sent to us by independent artists that send it to us directly. And please feel free to do that. We have a form for you to do that. It's on the website. My guest is Wilbur Allen. We're on Final Approach. We have time for one telephone call, 623-237-3814. If you tried to get through and you couldn't get through previously, now's the time to try it again, 623-237-3814. When we cut away for break, you were explaining about whether you could see through some of these things or not, and we had to cut away for break. So let me give you an opportunity to explain that.
I've got a sample that I took of, let me back that up. On that first frame, which shows the anomaly on the roof of the house of the Capitol building, outside of the Capitol building, in that same image was another object that was in the rear of the reflection pool park, just right beside this statue, and it was just sitting there in the dark. And whatever this anomalous object was, it had a specific shape to it. Now, in the last image of the night, which shows the objects generating the Stargate before they warped out, this particular anomalous object is now in front of me, along with another object it's joined with. The one on the bottom was translucent, and obviously from the sample, I could see through this object. But when I tried to analyze it, that's when the translucency of the object ceased to exist, and it stopped being translucent at that point. The objects that were stationary in the air above me, the leaf green spheres, were extremely unique because it seemed like they were a nucleus within a nucleus within a nucleus. Absolutely abstract. One of the spheres looked like an eye.
Now, you've said you think these are life forms. Do you think these are life forms that are native to Earth and we're just now beginning to notice them, or are these extraterrestrial?
I believe they're extraterrestrial because in the sample with the green spheres that were in the air, far off, I would say north of that particular image, was a large triangular anomaly, and it was ascending. And in the shot, it shows that this large object cut a hole in the overcast of the sky. It had to be massive to do that. And obviously, we don't have technology that's that big. And this particular object that's in the photograph resembles closely the object that was photographed in Phoenix, the Phoenix Lights.
I just took a look at some photographs, some video today from around the world, and there are a couple of places around the world where that same thing that we saw in the Phoenix Lights appears elsewhere in the world. So, you know, maybe the story about the flares might not be true, huh? Because, you know,
I don't think there were flares at all. Because,
No. First
of all, flares don't maintain luminosity like that.
Nor do they hold their position. And one thing flares do, for sure, is they descend. And they do not ascend and fly off south down past Tucson.
Stationary, absolutely not. So if we have something like that, and my point was on the USOs they photographed in Southwest, if it was something that within our technology and they wanted me to be quiet, all they had to do was look at my background and say, be quiet, and I would be quiet.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I've made that same argument for me. As I said earlier, you know, if you want to point attention to something, step out of your normal routine. And that's what they did here. They stepped out of what would be the normal routine, apparently. Certainly not the normal routine for most police departments across 50 states.
Absolutely not.
And
they did not follow procedure.
No, and if you want to keep something quiet, Follow your normal routine and just don't be excited about it. And if you want to point attention to it, do something bizarre. Step out of your normal routine, try to discredit the witness, and the whole world is watching. Well, where do you go from here, Wilbur?
Well, I just wanted to say that I continue to step forward with this material, and if I should have another event, I will put it forward as I did this one. And I also hope that, at least from our conversation, that you got to see that at some point or another, that I was not intellectually or psychologically or neurologically unstable. And
well, you certainly don't seem that way to me. But yet, having said that, it doesn't matter because the photos are the photos. Yeah, the photos are the photos. And
the facts remain.
Yeah, they show what they show. And I mean, but you certainly sound like you've got your feet on the ground. You don't sound unstable to me. But I, you know, again, from a police point of view, that's irrelevant to this case.
Absolutely. But from a police point of view, they did not follow procedure.
What do you expect will happen with your complaint to the mayor's office?
Nothing.
Okay, so you don't expect to get a reply, a response, or
nothing
anything?
Nothing at all. Because, you know, it's like this. If you're perceived as one thing, you will always be perceived as that. And in this case, I do believe that they have an incorrect perception of me and my research. Obviously, I'm into something that very few people are into, and I have experiences very few people have, and I've been able to prove that I've had these experiences, but yet that's still not enough.
Yeah, but you know something, it's not even germane from the police point of view. It's not even germane to whether you should investigate a report that's backed by photographs.
Absolutely not. You should take the data for what it's worth. Mm-hmm. And it is a forensic sample.
You can have a person that is really, really intellectually challenged or mentally challenged that walks into a police station and says, there's a body in the alley. Even if they think this guy's nuts, they're going to send someone out to look in the alley.
Absolutely. But what if you have samples that are so profound, they don't believe them? I'll give you a very good example.
Well, see, then you have to question who is it that needs mental health workers to check on them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I refer people to my website and Robert's website, UFODC.com and UNICUSMagazine.com. Robert does a lot of my backup work, so to speak, because he's able to substantiate the photographs that I take. I'm not out here trying to do something and prove something fictitiously. All I'm doing is presenting the facts.
Absolutely.
To the best of my ability.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to come on the show tonight. It's been wonderful talking with you, and a most interesting case, I guarantee you.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm most gracious and have a lot of gratitude for being here. And I just have to say to everyone to keep your eyes open and keep your cameras with you, because I guarantee you things are coming.
All right, if you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment. We're just a few seconds away from the end of the show.
Can I mention one other website, Kevin?
Yeah, if you do it quickly.
The website would be ngm.com, gallery 26800. That's nationalgeographic.com, gallery 26800. Look at the samples I have on National Geographic.
All right, and that speaks well as well. All right, just stay on the line with me. There you have it, folks. That's a wrap. That's a wrap for tonight, a wrap for this week. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.